The Ryan Tubridy Show on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Centre Parks. Enjoy family time like no other.
Love that song, Little Richard. Always loved Little Richard. Could you repeat the name of the song? Yes, it's called Hurry Sundown. Very simple, Eileen, and get downloading. You'll enjoy that immensely, I hope, forever and ever. Gary Elbert, our guest this morning. Welcome, Gary.
Hello, Ryan. How are you?
Pleasure to meet you.
Great to be here. Thanks very much.
We were talking about different things recently, and you're somebody I wanted to speak to, so delighted you're here. Tell us a little bit about yourself. You're from Roscrea.
Yeah, from Roscrea in North Tipperary, Ryan. Yeah, I'm 41 years old. Mm-hmm. And yeah, the reason why I'm here, I suppose, I want to raise awareness about an issue that's close to my heart. And that's the issue about the fact that I was born with what's called a cleft lip and palate. So yep. It's a facial difference, effectively. You know, that's what it is. It's the most common defect. And yeah, I was born with a cleft in 1981. And yeah, I just want to raise awareness on the issue in general overall.
Okay. So, yeah. You were born with what, how did you describe it? Or what? Now that you're an adult, you know what it is medically.
Yeah, yeah. Well, basically, what a cleft is effectively is it's a failure of the mouth and the nose to align in the early pregnancy, effectively. You know?
Okay.
So when you emerge into the world, you have a cleft there, effectively. You know? I'm not a medical expert now, so
no, but you're giving us the lay person's guide, which is
yeah,
exactly
the,
what
the
we
lay
can
person's
cope with.
Guide, yeah, and then I would have had, you know, probably two or three surgeries. Very early on, I don't recall them obviously, but yeah. Then I had my last surgery. I had when I was 17.
Okay, well let's keep it into the primary school and into secondary. That phase of your life, children are very funny with difference.
Yeah,
and they can either stare, point, or comment. But adults can often not be much better. So let's go back to school when you first became conscious of it. Because for years you would have had an innocence and realised you don't look like it. You look like everyone else. It doesn't matter damn what you look like.
Yeah.
When did you become conscious of it?
That's a very good question. I think, you see, I grew up on a housing estate in Roscrea, and it was a very close-knit community. So there was never any issues growing up in terms of childhood. You know, we played soccer every evening until the lights were turned off, and it was a lovely, like a real, it was 1980s Ireland, you know, so it was actually, that was, there was no real issues in terms of childhood. We were all close friends, and we still are all very close and tight-knit, but then, as you go into adolescence, I think you start to realise and become more conscious of the fact that you have a facial difference, and the reactions maybe start to change. I think that's kind of what, if I recall, it was more kind of awareness in adolescence, really, yeah.
What was happening in terms of reaction?
Well, you would get a lot more staring, maybe. There would be some name-calling as well, you know. Kind of random, you know. It wouldn't be like it's routine every day, it's almost every day. But it can be random, and it can range from the kind of nasty element to the more subtle kind of staring and double takes and that type of stuff, you know, because, like, having the cleft, I have a deviated septum, so I do look different. I'm well aware that my appearance can present a challenge, I suppose, to people, because you don't normally see a person who's different, whose appearance is on the far end of the spectrum. But the interesting thing about it is that, say, people who are really aesthetically pleasing, say, like, we take George Clooney or somebody, you know, they actually get the same reactions.
So I never thought of that way.
Yeah, that's the interesting thing about appearance. Probably even for yourself, say, somebody who's well known, if you're walking down the street in somewhere in Connemara or somewhere, you know, you might get a very similar reaction, because it's kind of a knowing, you know, there's something in the environment that's different here.
Well,
you know,
the gaze is held for a bat squeak of a second longer than it might be for a stranger.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They're looking just that a little bit longer.
Yeah.
And you go, oh, okay, well, that's what that, you get that.
Yeah, yeah. They're not so much these days now, but definitely, I think more so in my 20s, I was probably more conscious, I was more alert to it as well. And I was less open about discussing it.
No, I'd love to talk about that.
Yeah.
you chose not to get into conversations about it. Is that what it is? Or did you choose to ignore it? Did you see it as, to hell with everyone, I'm me, I don't care what people think, or what was happening
yeah,
there?
Yeah, I do remember, Ryan, it was when I was 17, I just began fifth year, and I had an operation scheduled. Now, for the effort that the operation required, and for the outcome of the operation, I was like out of school for like 5 weeks. And I remember like telling my friends that the reason why I was out of school was just because I was sick. There was kind of like, it was like an instinctual reaction to hide the fact, you know, that the real reason why I was out of school was because I was getting an operation, you know. But I suppose that's where the interesting thing about having a facial difference is, you can internalize elements of it, in terms of you can feel a sense of shame. Like, there is a lot of evidence in the literature that people who have facial difference, they can feel somewhat ashamed of the fact.
What are you ashamed of? This is life has given you this outward appearance.
Yeah.
Your inward appearance bears no resemblance to that, perhaps. But what are you ashamed of? Or what are they ashamed of?
There's a cultural aspect at play here, Ryan, and it's... if you look at our culture, we do equate appearance with moral worth. If you look at the James Bond movies are the best example, you know, where the bad guys usually have a scarring or a facial disfigurement of some kind. And the basic message to the viewer is, you know, a disfigured appearance basically equates to low moral worth. So it's kind of in that culture. So then, you see, from my point of view, I'm interested in what has been the historical experience of Irish people. What was it like in the 15th century for an Irish person to have a cleft or have some sort of appearance difference?
Is there evidence?
I don't know. Now, I'm hoping there might be really qualified historians listening that might be able to shine some light on that. I would like to know, but I would suggest that it would be quite similar to maybe some developing countries where it is considered... it could be considered to be a punishment from God, you know. It can be. There's a lot of superstition around
it. Is there really?
And there's some evidence of that in developing countries. And I wonder, was it like that in Ireland? Because I suspect, if you look at Ireland over the last 100 years, a lot of things were hidden away. A lot of things were swept under the carpet. And my concern has been, especially over the last few years, is how many people in Ireland are actually, is this a real issue for? And we actually don't know.
But you're completely broadening this conversation out, Gary, to not just somebody with a cleft lip or palate or what have you.
Yeah.
It's anyone with a mild difference. Now we're into a full different ballgame in terms of how society has treated people, how history has treated people, not just in Ireland, just in the world. Physical difference equates to a societal perception problem. And I think you are somebody, even with our conversation today, who would love to see a shift in that.
Yeah, yeah. You see, the thing that interests me is, and I wrote a dissertation on it last year, is there may be a case where we have a minority group in this country who have not been recognised as of yet. If you look at, say, the equality legislation that we have in this country, the other European countries have similar legislation as well. The reason for that legislation was minority groups in the 60s and 70s, all the way through to the 90s, began to campaign for greater rights and to, you know, to address the historical oppression that was there. The interesting thing for people who have facial differences is we've never been a social group. And there's interesting factors behind that. I know one of my lecturers said to me, she says, people with cleft palates are not a social group. And I said, that's true, but why not? And I suspect that it's because, number one, you don't want to have this dominate your whole life. You don't want this to be the main characteristic of your whole life.
To define you.
But at the same time, it is, as one of a person I was reading about recently, she said, it's a deeply felt social reality. It presents a range of complex psychosocial issues. It is a factor in your life. There's no doubt about it. But that lack of group status, I think, affects people with facial differences, people with appearance difference, because you need to have a group to campaign for greater rights and greater protections.
Maybe somebody who might be a member of that group might say, I don't want to be ghettoized. I don't want to be grouped off and different, othered.
Absolutely.
That, you know, you might get a bit of opposition to that.
That is the interesting part about it. You know? Like, I personally don't want to be defined by it. I'm not defined by it, but it's certainly a part of who I am. And my concern would be, you know, I've been aware of issues with other people, and they really struggle because of it. And I've often thought to myself, if they had that group mechanism, it's a very unique shared experience. You know yourself, it helps to talk. It helps to communicate.
What's the most tactless thing people say to you, or say to people with a cleft issue or what have you?
Well, like again, when it comes to facial difference, like it comes down to, say, the severity, the visibility of it. When I had my operations in the early 80s, I would imagine, and I stand corrected on this, that the skill level maybe and the knowledge wasn't what it is now. So I would imagine that the quality of the operations probably will be better now, the better services all around, you know. But like for me, having the deviated septum, people would zero in on your nose, for example, you know, and that would be probably the main target in terms of, now it doesn't happen too often, and look, it's a lot of very, very great people out there, you know, but I mentioned this because, you know, one negative comment can really hurt people.
You can throw you off kilter for the day.
Because
you could have 99 lovely comments. That's
you know, that the human mind is designed to protect against threats. So, you know, like from my point of view, if I see a group of drunk lads, you know, my threat detection system maybe expects a comment, you know. That's kind of like embedded in me.
Shoulders up, alert,
and you're expecting that. Yeah, so that's part of the daily psychosocial aspects of it. Yeah,
we have a lot in common. It's strange, but it's true. Strange to say, but it is true.
Yeah, I was saying to my friend, like I said, it's very interesting the commonalities between, say, somebody in the public glare like yourself and someone like myself for different reasons. Yeah.
Yeah, but as you say, you see a group of lads and you just go, okay, here we go, Jesus, like this could go anywhere.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you feel the exact same way for very different reasons, obviously. What I love about you is your frankness and your openness, because especially heightened by the fact that you weren't always like that. You talked about the shame earlier on. You talked about making up a story about why you were out of school for a few weeks. And then obviously you get a bit older. Why now? Why have you decided in recent times that you really want to talk about this to somebody like me and to friends listening in today?
Ryan, it's certainly not about my ego. It's about the passion and the belief I have that it most certainly can help. This conversation that we're having now is being probably very rarely being had in the Irish media environment. You know, you don't get many people from the community, for want of a better word, but that want to discuss it. And I that was the issue with myself. I seen the issue with other people. When I started to discuss it online, I was getting messages from other people, and there were messages of shock.
Shock at what?
Shock at the fact that I was so open about it. And you might think to yourself, it's kind of absurd when you have a visible difference that's external for everyone to see, that you can't hide away, you know, and you don't want to talk about or whatnot. But when you don't have the mechanism to communicate about something, or you've never heard those conversations being had, how do you actually know how to talk about it? Yeah. I don't walk into the local shop and he asks me, how are you, Gary? And I start talking about this. You know, there needs to be specific mechanisms there. So that's really it, to start the conversation, I think. Yeah.
What's when people started contacting you and saying, oh, this is great, they were in shock, but they're saying, thank God somebody's talking about this. I am that soldier also.
Yeah.
What is the one thing that people have, not one thing, but what the sort of commonalities, if you like, between people? Is there a similar story to be told along the way?
There's a shared experience.
That's what I'm trying to say.
There's a shared experience. I have a present for you. It's a book written by a lady called Lucy Greeley. And it was written in the early 90s. Now, Lucy has passed away since then, but she was actually from Dublin originally. And her family moved to New York. And she wrote a book about having a facial difference.
Autobiography of a Face.
Autobiography of a Face.
What a great title for a book. And, you know, what a thing for her to do, to write that. I mean, you saw this and obviously saw a light in the fog that other people saw in you when you went online talking about this.
Absolutely, yeah. But there's a lack of first-person narratives. When I wrote my dissertation last year, the most striking thing is, for such an interesting existential experience, there's a lack of first-person narratives throughout history. And so when you do find the odd one that broke through, like, say, with Lucy Greeley and with... there was an English guy who passed away recently as well called James Partridge. They have wrote books about the experience, and I'm kind of just going on the roundabout way to answer a question, but the one thing that does strike you is that is a very common set of experiences and very common conundrums that you face, you know. And she faced the exact same issues in New York in her early days when she was a kid.
Are we talking, Gary, about the staring, the feeling low because of a bad comment? Is it that sort of thing?
Yeah, it's very similar, yeah. Like, yeah. That book, I mean... The most striking thing for me is, again, the sense of disconnection that she felt, the sense that how she appeared was tied up in her value overall, you know, because your face is the most socially significant part of your body, you know. It's how you communicate, obviously. It's how
what a pity that is. What a pity that is. We haven't moved on that far, have we, as a species?
Well, this is the interesting, right? I mean, if you look at, say, we live in a 21st century, highly technological society, but there is elements of medievalism at play. And I would probably
talk to me about
that.
Medievalism at play. What? Describe that to me. Or explain that to me.
I would just say that, like, I would suspect that maybe attitudes towards facial differences or whatnot, they can be quite archaic. They can be quite medieval.
Okay.
You know, that's my suspicion, because if you think about it, there's never been a conversation. You have to scour the internet to find a book that someone's written about it. And there's a lack of research in this country as well. So there's a lack of knowledge.
One of the reasons I wanted to talk to you today was because I would meet a lot of children for toy show reasons. Mm. And one of the things I wanted to do in my time when I was there was to celebrate difference. Now, I'm not trying to be a hero here, Gary. I'm simply saying that oftentimes the best looking in society get to the top or whatever. And I was fed up with that, being frank with you. I thought it was time for, as I often say, the kid who didn't get picked for the team had a go.
Absolutely.
And that's when the show started to form this lovely, with people behind the scenes pick, knowing where we were going as a vibe. Mm. It became fairer.
Yeah.
And you talking today, I hope, will help, say, mom or dad, an auntie or an uncle or a grandparent of, say, a child who's walking in your shoes to go, there is weirdly nothing wrong despite what you might think.
Absolutely.
Does that make sense?
What it is, Ryan, is we need to make more people aware of the issue. We need to address the fact that there may be children going to school today that are being treated in a very, very despicable manner because of their appearance, you know. That is these are social facts. That type of behaviour doesn't belong in a modern 21st century society. So
we're trying to chip away at the tyranny of beauty and realise that beauty is not about the appearance. The beauty is at the risk of getting all Oprah now, but let's be honest, it's an inward thing, not an outward thing.
Yeah.
And we should be working that way.
Absolutely.
Let's take some texts. I'd like to tell you the story of my wonderful son, who was born in 1981 with a cleft lip and palate, says a text. 4 days after he was born, I cried to my sister on the phone, expressing my fear for him growing up and facing the world. Exactly 10 years later, I called my same sister to tell her that he had just been picked for the main part in, as you were saying, Ryan, earlier, a film. And life is a way of working out, but kindness is key.
That's amazing.
What a great story.
I'm going to tear up here now, Ryan. That's really
no,
nice.
What do you think of that?
That's absolutely lovely. Yeah, that's just really heartwarming. It's lovely to hear that, yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah, it really
That's why you're here today.
That's why I'm here today, yeah, absolutely.
To hear that.
Yeah, that's lovely.
Ryan, listening to Gary, and I know too well how he is feeling. I was born with a cleft palate in the 50s, and I still hate myself. It is so embarrassing. I hate meeting people. Now, that's upsetting.
Yeah, that's
that's a big thing for that person to write. And let's just say good morning to whoever that person is and to say, look at your text. We're not looking at you. We're hearing you. And if we were, if you were standing before us, we would look at you and hear you and we would not judge you.
Absolutely. Yeah. If he wants to get in contact, then I'll pass on my email address and we can meet up and have
Let's
a cup of coffee or have a chat. Absolutely.
Let's make that happen.
Yeah.
He or she get in touch. And we have details, so we'll look into that. I think your guest is fabulous, says Orla in Cork. He is so honest and forthright and brave to talk about his cleft palate, because obviously it cannot be easy to do so as we live in a new world where the falseness of one's appearance seems to be most important when that shouldn't be the case. What a shining example this gentleman, Gary, is, especially for any young person going through something similar, and he should be applauded. Another says, I applaud Gary's courage and eloquence. I think we underestimate the power of the aesthetic in our society. Mm. So much of our admiration and value system is based on appearance, yet it's rarely spoken about. Well done for inviting Gary in to talk about it. What would you like to achieve from our conversation this morning, Gary?
Yeah, well, just to repeat the fact, I wrote a dissertation last year, Ryan, and basically the dissertation was arguing for the appearance to be recognised as a characteristic potentially in the equality legislation, to raise that issue and to maybe form a group, you know, a support group, like other minority groups would have, you know, and put the issue out there front and centre, you know, and provide that support for families, provide that support for kids, create a deeper connections with people, and just create that sense of, you know, belonging. And again, it's a shared experience. It's an interesting experience. Mm. There's certainly nothing to be ashamed about. And let's get talking together with each other. Yeah.
You have a book. You must have a book in you, have you?
I'm working on a book, Ryan. Yeah.
I
almost have the first draft done. And
have you a title yet?
Provisional title is Hidden Away. That's the provisional title.
Nice.
And the idea is to bring, well, it was a group of people out into the light, and, you know, to talk about my own journey as well, you know.
Have you a publisher for that yet?
No, not yet, no.
Someone with half a brain will be onto us immediately to fix that. Listening to Gary, we humans can be incredibly thick and insensitive, or at worst, deliberately cruel. I'm a fairly average-looking woman, but people have felt completely free to make adverse comments about my looks. I'm still astounded by this. I would never comment on anyone unless it was a compliment. What is wrong with us? Another said, thank you for this interview with Gary on cleft. My 30-year-old son missed out on going to social events, clubs, etc. in his teenage years and his 20s. He is the kindest, wittiest person you could meet, but has no social life. And what upsets him most is that he has never had a girlfriend. Can I ask you about that, the dating situation and how that was, particularly in your teens and 20s?
Yeah, in the teens it was non-existent. Yeah, it was. It really wasn't. Again, because I used to work in discos later on in life, and it's very, very appearance-based, you know, the early days of adolescence and whatnot.
Yeah.
But even if you look at the nightclub scene or a pub scene, it's you know, it's very extremely superficial, I would argue. Not all, but in general, I would. Yeah, and
it get better in terms of meeting somebody? Or
yeah,
whatever?
Yeah. No, it has. Like, and I find as I get older, Ryan, and more mature, and when I have these conversations, people are more open and more receptive, and that's how you create connections with people. You know, it's create meaningful connections with people.
Yeah. How old are you now?
I'm 41, but I feel like I'm 21.
Looking good. You are running like a madman. The Spartathlon in Greece, 264 kilometers in 40 degrees heat, finishing at the feet of King Leonidas. It took you 35 and a half hours. My goodness, I'm exhausted just reading that sentence. How was it for you? You loved the running, clearly.
Yeah, do you know, Ryan, I basically started running regularly probably at the start of 2020. I ran the Kinvara Marathon in March 2020, just before the pandemic and lockdowns hit. And I dedicated myself to running. I started getting big into the ultra running and the ultra events. I qualified for Spartathlon, and I flew over there last September. And the race began at beneath the Acropolis.
Amazing.
350 of the best ultra endurance athletes in the world, and there was me, former smoker, and it was quite honestly the most incredible experience of my whole life. I finished the race running through the town of Sparta, tears were streaming down my face. Tears of joy, relief.
What an image, yeah.
My mum was there, brought my mum over, and she waited for me, and we finished the race together. We have an amazing photo on the last talk, and it was absolutely incredible.
Are you on Twitter or Instagram or something? If people want to contact you?
I'm on Facebook, all right.
Okay. And, Gary Elbert.
Gary Elbert on Facebook.
Can you ask Gary, what's a considerate way to respond to a child who points out a facial difference in someone in public when the person has heard them? What a great question from Carol.
I think it comes down to education. I think it's very hard to manage the emotional aspects of that. You know, you're walking down the street with your family member and then it feels like an assault. It is an assault in some respects.
God, yeah.
But you also have to take into account that it's coming from a child. So education generally, I think, is the best way forward there, yeah.
We'll end on a text that says, I know Gary as a super athlete, not as a person with a cleft lip. He's an amazing man. That'll do nicely for now. Gary, love talking to you. Come back when that book is published. And thank you for your time this morning. Real
Thanks
pleasure.
Thanks very much, Ryan. Great
not
to
at all.
Here.
Gary Albert joining us live in studio at 7 minutes to 10.